This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 14th at 12:15 p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like we'll finally settle the abortion issue nearly 50 years after the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade.
One day, Ann. One day. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's podcast on Ohio politics, where we follow the moves of all those shrewd Snollygosters in the statehouse and beyond. I'm Steve Brown. We mentioned abortion because it is back in the news. It never really leaves, but it's back in the headlines, certainly, with the Ohio Senate approving the so-called heartbeat bill. That's the bill seeking to ban abortions after the detection of a fetal heartbeat. It now goes to the House for consideration. Nothing's really changed since the episode we did on the heartbeat bill, so you can go back and listen to that if you're interested. As for this week's episode, my normal co-host, Mike Thompson, he's currently sunning somewhere in Spain with his family, so we have the pleasure, the honor of being joined by the incomparable Ann Fisher, the host of WOSU's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, also a podcast that you can find on the WOSU mobile app or iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Ann, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Great to be here. I just wish there was something to talk about.
It's like you never left.
Yeah.
Luckily, the politicians always give us something to talk about.
Exactly.
We will talk about our Snollygoster of the week coming up in just a few minutes. First, the fight over Ohio's congressional map.
Ohio has among the most egregiously gerrymandered maps in the country and of all time.
That's Fred Levinson, the legal director with the Ohio ACLU, talking about why the civil liberties group brought a lawsuit meant to hit the reset button on Ohio's congressional map.
The lawsuit contends the map drawn by Republicans after the last census gives them an unfair advantage. Republicans have a slight majority in overall voter registrations in Ohio, but they control three quarters of the congressional districts from Ohio. Jen Miller is with the Ohio League of Women Voters, another group behind the lawsuit.
This is about the fact that right now Ohioans are going to the ballot to vote under unconstitutional conditions.
Ohio's congressional map is already scheduled to be redrawn in 2021 after the next census, but the lawsuit seeks to have it thrown out and redrawn ahead of the 2020 election.
Now, Republicans generally avoid the topic of gerrymandering, just like Democrats do when they're in charge and they're doing it themselves. But here is new Republican Secretary of State Frank LaRose speaking at a recent forum hosted by the Associated Press.
The people of Ohio have spoken, and the chance to draw those new maps will come after the census in 2020, when we do that every 10 years, and that'll be in 2021. I think that's the best course of action.
When LaRose says people have spoken, he's talking about a more bipartisan redistricting process approved by voters last year. LaRose says redrawing the map before 2021 would lead to voter confusion. Now that we have the table pretty well set, joining us now, WOSU reporter Nick Evans, who has covered the lawsuit, and he gathered all the sound bites that we just heard. Nick, welcome to Snollygoster.
Happy to be here.
So the case now sits with a panel of federal judges after testimony wrapped up on Wednesday. You did a great setup piece for us when the trial started. What were some of the highlights of the 8 days of testimony?
Well, one of the first highlights would be former Ohio House Speaker Bill Batchelder. He was leading the charge when this map drawing process began just after the 2010 census. What he contends is that the Republican Party was not controlling the map drawing process lock, stock, and barrel as the challengers in this lawsuit portray. He says that he was a new House Speaker, he had a new governor, he didn't have a rock solid majority behind him. And so he was working with party operatives from both sides to try to come together on figuring out what changes would be made. They talked about districts like Congressional District 3 here in Franklin County, talked about Congressional District 9 up in northern Ohio. The state was going to lose two seats.
No matter what, right?
Right, because of changes in population. And so what he says is that there was an agreement that both parties would lose one seat. What was being contended by the challengers is that the way it was drawn not only made both parties lose one seat, it also locked in this broad majority for Republicans. the snake by the lake, the Congressional District 9, mm-hmm. represented by Marcy Kaptur, the longest serving woman in the U.S. House. She was one of the people also called by the challengers, and she contends that this agreement that Bill Batchelder was portraying, that was never really struck, right? She suggests that her district was torn apart. She says that she never ever wanted to have to run against Dennis Kucinich, a former Cleveland mayor, a former gubernatorial candidate most recently, and also a former presidential candidate. The way that the Congressional District 9 was redrawn, it put her head-to-head with Democrat Dennis Kucinich. Batchelder and the people on the Republican side, the operatives working to draw the map, contend that Democrats agreed to let that happen as part of the, you know, Democrats losing one seat. Kaptur says that was never the case.
That's certainly not the case that had been reported. When you go back and look at the reporting at the time, you hear about Republicans holed up in a hotel room using computer algorithms to draw the most Republican-friendly districts. John Boehner, former U.S. House Speaker from suburban Cincinnati, was also heavily involved in the process, even though legally he had no standing in the
right.
process. He was just supposedly in constant contact with Ohio Republicans. So that the image that Bill Batchelder is trying to portray is certainly in stark contrast to the reporting at the time, certainly. Would you say, Ann Fisher?
Well, there's going to be certain seats that are going to be the minority party's seats. And there are certain requirements as it stands now that you have to have certain seats for minority candidates and minority office holders. And
Minority access.
And that they know they have to do that. So there's going to be certain agreements with the Democrats, while the Republicans are in control, to make sure they get enough seats that are held by minority office holders. There are certain agreements, but the idea that there's some sweeping agreement with Democrats about
right.
how this all came to be is ridiculous. I mean, if it was all big, happy family agreement with the Democrats and the Republicans, then there wouldn't be a fight over who gets to draw the lines every 10 years.
Right.
There's implicitly disagreement over who gets to draw the lines.
A lot of people in the party that does the gerrymandering at the time will try to make it basically seem like it's just a coincidence that, you know, 52% of registered voters are Republicans, but somehow 75% of our congressional districts are controlled by
yeah.
They'll really make it seem like a coincidence.
The people who draw the lines are, it's very specific. They run for certain public offices.
Mm-hmm.
They get on the panel that draws the lines. If you have a majority in the Ohio House and Senate, you're going to be the majority on the panel that draws the lines, whether it's for legislative districts or not. And if you've got the right office holders, state auditors, state auditor, the Secretary of State, and the governor, you're going to be on the panel too. Whoever controls that, and Republicans control everything. So to suggest that Democrats have a voice in this is kind of disingenuous. Likewise, back in the day when Democrats controlled everything,
right.
it was the same thing.
Yeah, the party control is in favor of gerrymandering.
Right.
It just happens to be Republicans in Ohio. So again, this lawsuit seeks to have the map thrown out ahead of the 2020 election. There is some precedent for hitting the reset button early. It could walk us through how this compares, both the similarities and the difference between Ohio and what happened in Pennsylvania with their congressional map.
Well, Pennsylvania and also Florida, where I'm pretty familiar and I used to work before
mm-hmm.
moving up here. The difference, the most obvious difference between this case and the cases in other states where courts have ordered a new map to be drawn, is those challenges are on state constitutional grounds. This is a federal one, and right now there is really there is no existing precedent for a federal case or for a federal judge to say go and do that redraw, at least as they are challenging it right now. So right now, this case is definitely uncharted territory. We have this weird process where there's a three-judge panel, and any sort of challenge to their eventual decision gets sent directly to the Supreme Court. But what'll happen next, it's very, very unclear.
You know, Frank LaRose says that redrawing the map before 2021 would lead to voter confusion. It's possible. There's a lot of things that lead to voter confusion anyways. But the bottom line is, if you wait till 2021, you're going, it, no matter when, if you wait till then, even then, it's going to be years before the makeup is affected, the ultimate makeup of the legislature, of Congress, is affected by these kinds of issues. It takes years to overcome 20 or 30 years of Republican dominance at the map drawing table. So it doesn't happen overnight. So I think that the people who want are pushing for this say, no, it's sooner the better. Don't wait until 2021. Do it now, because it's 2021 will make that much difference.
I think
it's incremental.
I think the other point to bring up is that they're thinking broader than simply Ohio or simply the map redraw after the 2020 census. They're thinking that they want a federal standard. They want something that's out there where a federal judge at some level says, this that you did, this right here is too far. And now I don't know that they're going to end up with a mathematical formula at the end of this, but I think that they really want to have something that says, in this particular effort, the Republican Party went too far, so that any other state after the 2020 election or after the 2020 census will be able to, you know, say, is this okay or is this not okay?
How does the Ohio case intersect with the U.S. Supreme Court cases from Maryland and North Carolina?
So that's another example of a federal case where they are trying to establish a standard. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to take up these cases and look at the maps produced in Maryland and North Carolina. Both are seen as pretty obvious gerrymanders, one to favor Democrats, one to favor Republicans. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the U.S. Supreme Court does. According to AG Yost, they're expecting a decision probably sometime in June. Of course, the Supreme Court operates on its own timetable, so we will see. But what's determined with those, because the Supreme Court in its last session walked up to the edge of trying to set a standard for redistricting and then decided not to, mm-hmm. What's on the table with this is potentially a decision, like I said previously, that would say this is a standard that we can use to determine if a map is fair. If they come out with something, I think that could have a big impact on what happens either way with the Ohio case.
So the Ohio case, the ruling should come out before the June U.S. Supreme Court ruling. That ruling could conceivably punt until the Supreme Court rules. They could conceivably say, okay, redraw a map now. Is there any clear path for what happens next after? I guess it depends on what happens with the ruling, right? But I guess if Ohio's map is ruled unconstitutional, is there any clear path for what happens next?
Short answer is I would say no. I mean, I think that one thing that you can guarantee with this case is that it will be appealed, you know, regardless of which side emerges victorious with this particular hearing. It'll be interesting to see what form or fashion the exact ruling comes out with. Like, do they say scrap the entire map and start over? Mm-hmm. Do they make very specific instructions as to these are the districts that are a problem for these specific reasons? You are to remedy them in this particular way. You know, it depends on how they come out with their ruling and what they direct. But I think the only thing we can be certain of is that there will be an appeal.
Well, we'll certainly cover it when it comes out. WOSU reporter Nick Evans helping us understand the lawsuit over Ohio's congressional map. Testimony in that suit wrapped up Wednesday, and a panel of three federal judges is expected to make a ruling in the coming weeks. Nick, thanks for joining Snollygoster.
Anytime.
Let's take a short break, and we will be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster, Ohio's political podcast from WOSU Public Media. I'm Ann Fisher, sitting in for Mike Thompson this week. It's time for our Snollygoster of the Week Award. For people who don't know, a Snollygoster is a self-serving politician who puts their own self-interests ahead of the public good.
Or it's just a politician, right? But in this week, anyway, our Snollygoster of the Week is Frank Jackson, the mayor of Cleveland. 3 years ago, Jackson told voters that they needed to raise the income tax by 0.5%, and he did a good job because that's what voters voted to do. And while there was some worry about how the tax hike would affect businesses, Jackson told News 5 in Cleveland that he was more concerned with emergency services and plowing streets.
Are you afraid that this is going to drive employers out of Cleveland?
No, what I'm afraid of is that if, in fact, I can't plow a street, why would they even come to Cleveland?
Well, it turns out that as he was selling the public on that need to use public money on vital public services, he was secretly crafting a massive incentive package to try to lure Amazon to Cleveland.
Now, a lot of cities, including Columbus and Cincinnati, also made pitches for the online retailer's second North American headquarters. So that's nothing particularly scandalous, but Cleveland's offer stands out for a couple of reasons.
Number one, Jackson did not tell voters that he was doing it. That's a little different. Another, which I think is the bigger deal, a wage tax break that he offered Amazon. Cleveland.com reports it was an unprecedented offer in size at nearly $500 million over 15 years. That tax break was offered less than 1 year after Jackson successfully campaigned for a large wage tax increase for those already working in Cleveland. Jackson said that everyone needed to pitch in because the city was broke.
So congratulations to Cleveland Mayor Frank Jackson. You are our Snollygoster of the Week.
Congrats, Frank. If you have a suggestion for our next Snollygoster of the Week, or if you just want to give us a suggestion, even a complaint, you can send that note to snollygoster@wosu.org. And you can always hit up WOSU Public Media on Twitter and Facebook.
You can also find All Sides with Ann Fisher on Facebook and Twitter. You can also hear podcasts of entire episodes on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big thanks again to Ann Fisher filling in this week. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown, and this is Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.